Interfacing with the Matrix. The Allspark that links everyone and everything that ever lived or ever will live.
Welcome to Axon Archives, the highest rated Beast Era podcast on Apple Podcasts, where we watch every episode of the 90s CG cartoon, Beast Machines. This time around, we're going to be watching Bumblebee, the 2018 movie.
Yep.
I watched this on, I have the disc. You could probably probably watch it on Netflix by now, maybe.
Yeah. Also, who are you?
Oh, yeah, I'm Toad.
I'm James.
So you guys can watch this one a couple of different ways. Redbox, Redbox, Netflix, probably by now. Mm-hmm. A couple of streaming services. It just came out like less than a month ago. So
yeah.
Which is a really weird thing for us to do. We've been covering stuff that was made 20 years ago.
This is true. This is literally the most recent thing we could possibly watch for. Well, okay, maybe not the most recent things, because, I guess we could watch Cyberverse. But it's close to it.
Yeah. Although, I've been saying, I've said this, a few times, Cyberverse is good if you want to watch it. It's all on Hasbro's YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's do a little bit of catch-up. What's going on with you, James?
Let's see. Oh God, I actually had some stuff. I got a little drained from work, so now I'm blanking on it.
Hmm.
Been replaying Earthbound. I think I mentioned it last time. That's still good.
Oh, cool.
Uh-huh. I had a Transformers related update for this one, but I do not right now.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's anything Transformers related going on with me either, or just in general either. Nothing really happened last week.
See, I've downloaded the new Super Smash Bros. 3.0 update, but I have not actually tried it yet.
Oh, I actually finally started my copy. It was a couple weeks ago. And let me ask you something. Just because it's the first copy of Smash Bros. I've actually owned.
Sure.
Every other version I've just played at my cousin's house.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone care about the story mode?
No. I mean, there'll be, some fun moments. There are, a couple, fun moments in it. And, some of the spirit battles are genuinely creative. But, it's just an excuse to throw things together. Even Subspace Emissary, which was the story mode from Brawl, which had much more elaborate story scenes, they're, they're fun, but, also, you could mostly enjoy them completely divorced from the game, which I think was actually a problem, is that's, people would just go on YouTube and watch all the cutscenes instead of actually playing through the mode.
That actually brings me to my second question. Do I need to play the story mode?
No.
Cool.
It is one way to unlock characters, but you can unlock them just by playing the regular multiplayer game, and in fact, it's probably faster to unlock it either just through, playing, regular versus matches or even the classics mode. Because if you go through it just, if you go through it strictly through, the story mode, there's some characters you won't unlock to, way deep into it.
Okay.
For, no reason.
Yeah, I want my Greninja, actually.
Yeah,
I haven't gotten Greninja yet, and I'm, well, and because they started off with Kirby, like, that became, before I realized, like, I don't have to play the story mode, that yeah. became my best character for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was trying to, but, back, I think it was in Brawl, I got pretty good with Link, and so I was trying to, like, mm-hmm. relearn that character, especially since, like, since the last time I played Brawl, I've actually learned to a little bit of swordsmanship, so I want to bring that into my fighting style. Yeah. Okay, so good. Also, I don't have to... good?
Yeah. Oh, also unrelated, it may be offline. Like, I should probably get your, like, friend code for that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. I will... If anyone wants it, let me know. Mm-hmm. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
I'm willing to share it. It's just, because
yeah.
of my profession, I gotta be a little close to the chest with certain personal details.
Yeah, it also seems weirdly tacky in a very weird way to like give out my friend code on a podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, you saw it as like my friend. I'm more like I don't want my students finding this.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah, that is less of a concern for me with my position.
Yeah. I told you what happened a couple weeks ago. I got talked to about the social media policy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Yeah.
I guess the other thing is, like, oh, I started listening to music. I know that's, like, such a unique hobby, but, like, I kind of fell off on that between listening to podcasts and also mainly relying on streaming music. I had, like, tons of music that, like, you know, I've gotten over the years, just, like, I wouldn't be able to listen to because it's not available on that. So I'm just like...
Hmm.
I was reading an article talking about, like, how, like, the original appeal of the iPhone was just, like, it was a phone and an MP3-in-1, and just player-in-1. Just, like, you know, why don't I use mine as an MP3 player? Like, I have a big enough SD card that I can put it in there.
Right? Yeah. So, like,
yeah, so I, like, actually had, like, some music I've downloaded, been, like, making some playlists. Like, it's a good way to kind of, like, re-engage, like, stuff you like. Just, like, well, this music I like. Well, let me find, like, re-listen to it and, like, you know, have it on, like, podcasts. I made playlists for, like, for mood and stuff, and for, like, writing and things, and just, like, kind of feels like, you know, they were very comfortable going back to stuff like that.
Yeah.
Kind of like going back for, like, some of these old shows, bringing, like, old memories.
Way to tie it back into the show.
Yep.
that was actually how I did it kind of exclusively for a little, like, actually until, I think, maybe this year. Because I've never really been a huge music listener.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my collection that I would add on to like once in a while, but mm-hmm. until I think it was mid February, I was pretty much exclusively the only music I had was on my phone or stuff that if I wanted to like listen to once or twice, I'd find it on a Vivo page on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. I signed up for Apple Music now, but it's not quite the same. I do enjoy the fact that I got to I was able to download all of Chris or Titus's entire album history, mm-hmm. thanks to Apple Music though. Like one of the few comedians I've actually seen live, so mm-hmm. that was really, and I rediscovered him thanks to a few clips of his show showing up on YouTube. Speaking of which, if anyone has like DVDs of that show, they're out of print now, so cherish them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Speaking of downloading stuff, I must ask: Did you get the Transformers IDW bundle before it ended?
Yes, I did.
Okay, nice.
I'm pretty sure I got that episode up before it ended.
Uh-huh.
I hope I did. Mm-hmm. If I didn't, guys, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
I think that was when I did the six uploads in a span of 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I hope everyone got to listen to that in time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
If not, we'll try to be more proactive if it goes up. They do another bundle.
Yeah. I think we had when you told me about it, I think we had like 3 weeks left before it ended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still weird to me they didn't put up the spotlights inside the bundle, but whatever.
Yeah. All right. So let's get started.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, this is our 10th bonus episode overall. Which nice bit of symmetry there. Wow. We did a lot of bonus episodes like between one of the seasons then.
Uh-huh.
Because if this is the 10th, we've only finished our 4th season overall.
I think, like, Beast Wars Uprising took a lot out of us.
It did, but that was only two episodes. We must have had, well, I have the history right here, but it's not really important. So we're watching, so we watched Bumblebee. This aired, or just premiered, sorry, December 3rd in 2018, in Germany, I believe. It was in Berlin. Written by Christina Hodson, who's an English play, a screenwriter who, whose screenplays have, also include the 2020 Birds of Prey movie, upcoming. She's had three scripts on the blacklist, which is apparently an annual list of Hollywood's best, like, unproduced screenplays.
I only know about it because I hear ads for, like, the Blacklist Reads podcast sometimes, but I've never actually listened to it.
Okay, yeah. I saw the Blacklist, and I thought of, like, three different things.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I thought of the one that doesn't let you go into any casino in Vegas. The one that if you're a communist, and then also the show. So this was directed by Travis Knight, American animator, film director, and producer who has worked on as lead animator for stop-motion animation studio Laika and directed the film Kubo and the Two Strings, which I got to catch a snippet of that in the break room a few weeks back, and it was, like, because, I'm not going to spoil it, but Kubo's grandfather, like, he has to, like, have a heart-to-heart with him. So anyone knows that, like, I've had, like, one grandparent in my life, and I lost her a few years ago, so that kind of just hit me right where it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a good movie. It didn't hit me quite as hard as it hit some other people, but, it, like, at least from, like, an animation and a visual standpoint, it was gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, like, was that stop motion?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I thought it was just really, really good realistic CG.
Nope.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really gorgeous. He's the son of the co-founder and current chairman emeritus of Nike, who is also the CEO of Leica.
Huh. That is a weird connection I did not know.
Yeah, I was looking for credits for him on Wikipedia, and that was on the top of his page. I believe his dad is Mike Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In March 2nd, 2017, Knight was revealed to be directing Bumblebee, marking Knight's first time working on live action. Knight, a fan of G1, used many elements of G1 in the film. His next project is an adaptation of The $6 Million Man, starring Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, gunning up to the release, finding out that Travis Knight was directing it gave me a lot more hopes for this movie than I had for live-action movies in a while. I don't know if we've really talked about our experience with the live-action films. You can go first. Like, what is your experience with the live-action films? Which ones have you watched, and which ones did you stop watching them?
Dark of the Moon for both of those. I watched three of the five. And even though, I found out that, like, the last third of Age of Extinction takes place in China, and it's totally, that last third is basically just pandering to the Chinese government. I was just like, I'm fine. Plus the fact that the Dinobots are not really in it either.
Yeah, as a noted Dinobot fan, I skipped that movie when I saw him just like, nope, this is a trick. They're going to be in like 10 minutes of the movie at that. And I was right.
You were.
I saw the first three, I think, all in theaters. The first one, I remember thinking just like, well, this is not entirely expected, but this isn't a bad movie. And then it, like, getting substantially worse. I remember going and seeing the second one in IMAX because I was hyped for it. That was a mistake.
Yeah, I've learned that I need to start keeping track of what movies are in production during a writer's strike.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because that's actually a huge part to blame for the second movie.
Yeah.
He didn't, like, Bay didn't have a finished script when they had to start filming.
Right.
Which is why, like, during an action scene, a lot of short cuts is a good way to tell a bad action scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fact that they made all the primes look like bad guys, that was weird.
Yeah, I mean, for what you could see of them. Yeah. I remember the second one was kind of realizing Bay had a different idea of Transformers, when you have that opening scene in Hong Kong, like, ah, like, there's a, like, new Decepticons, and then they get brutally murdered and just like, what?
Yeah.
That seems weird. They killed one of the Constructicons. How are they gonna form Devastator later in the movie? It's like, the answer, there's just more nameless Constructicons, I guess.
Or that wasn't, or maybe that was just a Decepticon with a construction vehicle mode, not an actual Constructicon. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I saw Revenge of the Fallen at a midnight premiere. I didn't watch it. It wasn't an IMAX, but we did like get tickets to go see this like first thing, and I thought I liked it.
The first time I thought I liked it too, but it was like going on later ones is like, no, this actually. It was kind of like when I watched episode one, or just like I kind of tricked myself, like, and it wasn't until later where I was like, no, I don't think this is actually good. I was just hyped for this movie.
Mm.
I think I watched it with another friend too, and I said like, didn't you like? He's like, that movie was bad. And like, oh, was that movie actually bad? Oh no.
I'm a midichlorian apologist, so it still make I think it still makes sense with the previous established continuity.
I mean, we.
We don't have to get that into that.
No, though. No, yeah. That is a whole nother podcast. If we want to go down that road.
There was an incontinuity. There was a retcon that kind of made it that did smooth out the edges of that though.
Midichlorians didn't ruin like the thing I really dislike the movie. It's more of like, and then, no, we're not going. Yeah, we're not yeah. going into like prequels talk.
There's plenty to pick apart with that.
There are plenty of people you could look at, like, get prequels things. Don't watch Red Letter Media. You don't have to. Those things go on too long and kind of go overboard. Also, the weird like, stalker subplot is... Why is that even in those videos?
Oh, yeah. That is... lots of conspiracy theories about those. I was about to talk about one, but no. Okay, so...
No.
yeah. Getting into the movie. Mm-hmm. So on the planet Cybertron, the Autobot Resistance is led by Optimus Prime, who is on the verge of losing the civil war against the Decepticons and prepared to evacuate the planet. They refer to them multiple times as the Autobot Resistance, and even Cliffjumper in a second calls it the Autobot Resistance. Mm-hmm. Which I guess that means both sides acknowledge Megatron and Decepticons as the legitimate government of the planet.
Yeah,
which is a weird thing to think about.
I mean, it kind of depends. Like, we don't really know the full story of what's going on, and the movie doesn't go into, and while I'm sure there's probably some ancillary materials, a lot of it's probably non-canon for reasons we will go into later.
Yeah.
But I remember watching this in, like, this one I actually saw in the theater, a second-run theater, admittedly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of hyped because you get a whole bunch of different characters who actually look like what you expect them. Like, hey, I can recognize RC, Wheeljack. Yeah. Like, Brawn, Ratchet, Brawn even kind of dies, like, or at least gets shot like he does in the original movie.
Actually, watching a few of the Cybertronics free music videos, and I just saw that, I'm like, oh my god, RC has Princess Leia hair.
Uh-huh. She definitely does.
Yeah, I didn't get a good look at her before. But speaking of RC and them, so we see RC trying to contact the Capitol. Voiced by Gray Griffin, who most people would know better as Gray Delisle.
Oh, I didn't know her name changed.
So both Delisle and Griffin are her married names. I think she got Delisle before she started voice acting. More recently, her husband has last name Griffin. She wanted to use her new married name, I guess, because it'd be a little weird to use your other married name as your professional name while you're...
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, Wheeljack is voiced by Steve Bloom.
Mm-hmm.
They got some good voice actors in here. I wish they had more to do, though. Kirk Bailey voices Brawn and a few Seekers/Coneheads that get taken out by Bumblebee. He's best known for his role as Kevin Ugly in Nickelodeon sitcom Salute Your Sword.
Holy crap, he was ugly? Wow, that is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever watched any of that, because I don't know if it was in reruns by the time you were watching Nickelodeon, but I watched a ton of that. He was like a great, as the token, like, kind of like, a like dorky authority figure on that show. Salute Your Shorts is like...
I probably would have liked him then, because that's basically me.
Yeah. Sadly, I don't think, because that was actually one of the better, like, Nickelodeon live-action shows. Like, it was way better than Hey Dude.
Hmm. What about Pete and Pete?
No, Pete and Pete's really good, too.
Okay, yeah. I know, I just named, like, one of the few live-action Nickelodeon shows I know.
That's fair.
Okay, so Decepticon Force, led by Soundwave and Shockwave, both voiced by John Bailey, who you may know as the Epic Voice Guy, and Starscream, who gets no lines, even though Steve Bloom's right in this movie.
I'm kind of surprised, like, Soundwave is not voiced by Frank Welker?
He's not in this movie, remember? Like, if you have Megatron in here, then it's easy to just have him do Soundwave, too.
No, but, Frank Welker's also the traditional voice of Soundwave.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. But Frank Welker's not in this movie.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, they do, like, Soundwave, the post-processing effect, so, like, I would have guessed that it was Frank Welker, since it sounds like Soundwave.
Yeah, no, but, like, that's the thing with Soundwave. Anyone can sound like Soundwave.
I mean, there's still a thing. Like Frank Welker's doing a voice. It's actually basically his Dr. Claw voice, which you can tell because there's one episode of the original show where they forget to add on the post-processing, so he's speaking, so he's has an unedited voice, and he's like, oh yeah, he's basically doing Dr. Claw.
Mm. Did you ever see, there's this one clip of Transformers Prime where Soundwave actually speaks. He has two lines. Soundwave superior, Autobots inferior, right before he crashes his own drives to keep them from getting his information.
That must be towards the end, because I do not remember watching that, but of course that is the one line he would say.
Yeah, it was towards the end, but they captured him and they're trying to get information out of him. Yeah. And then instead of, he's just like, all right, I'm just gonna destroy my own brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, take that. Yeah.
Not to go too much on a tangent, I will admit, like, while there were some character changes that I found weird in Prime, silent, but, like, playback Soundwave actually kind of worked for me in Prime.
Yeah. I just realized that's a Bumblebee shtick.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the playback thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, it does work. Soundwave, Shockwave, and Starscream, who get no lines, intercept them during the evacuation, and Autobot Scout B-127 to Earth on an escape pod in order to set up a base of operations where the Autobots can regroup. So I don't know if this is establishing continuity, because didn't watch Age of Extinction over last night. This was the form that we saw the Autobots coming to Earth in the first movie. Which kind of answers the question I've had, was like, were they just flying through space in their own bodies?
I mean, in the context of that movie, yes. This one definitely goes with it. Like, this movie's kind of weird, where it's sort of in continuity with the older movies, and sort of not, for reasons that the short version is, there were a bunch of reshoots. We'll go into it more later.
Yeah.
I also forgot, looking at my notes, I have Optimus Prime kicks ass and has a mouth plate just like Primus intended.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Bumblebee has a chipper voice. It would be a shame if something terrible to happen to it.
In this I don't know if they established it previously, but in this continuity, Megatron's not the one who ripped it out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. But also, in the previous continuity, I think he lost it as a result of a specific battle that they said, I might be thinking of the game continuity.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so B-127 reaches Earth alone, crash landing in California and disrupting a training exercise by Sector 7, the government agency that monitors extraterrestrial activity on Earth. Uh-huh. Did they refer to them as an MBE in the scene?
I want to say yes.
Okay. Like, John Cena's character didn't seem super surprised, but he's probably the first MBE they see. But for those who haven't seen the first few movies, MBE is a non-biological entity.
Yeah.
He's probably the first MBE that they've seen that wasn't just, that actually is moving around.
Mm-hmm.
So we
can't skip over. So, like, sorry, I have a John Cena joke. So it opens up by seeing some soldiers doing a training exercise. They're going in, and then one gets hit by a snare, and then they all seem to lose. And John Cena comes out of nowhere, to which I say, obviously he did not see John, obviously he lost, because you can't, obviously he lost to John Cena, because you can't see him. Obvious John Cena joke.
Okay.
Sorry, hey, I had to get that one out of the way earlier.
No, like, no, that's not what I meant. I mean, like, I feel like I don't know enough John Cena to get this joke you're making.
Don't worry about it. Okay. I considered trying to cram in a bunch of wrestling jokes from scripts, like, nah, I just need, like, one can't-see-you joke.
Okay. So, Colonel Jack Burns, who is just John Cena, we're just gonna refer to him as John Cena.
Yeah.
I will
say what is kind of hilarious during this opening scene is he's having this camaraderie with this friend who I forget if he even gets a name, like his one black friend, and instead of just like, I remember watching this and like, oh, he's totally gonna die to like set up like him on a dark path, and which kind of does but kind of doesn't happen.
Yeah, John Cena will get a really cool face scar in a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since as they're joking around, like there is an explosion and lands, which he initially thinks that like that someone was using that they were using napalm on a practice run, but then it's like, no, it wasn't.
Yeah. So yeah, it's actually B-127.
Mm-hmm.
He scans a jeep and flees to a mine where Blitzwing and Decepticon Seeker, voiced by old Batmanta himself, David Sobolov, ambushes him. Did you catch that was him? While you're watching?
No, I did not.
Yeah. David Sobolov, like, in more recent years has become a pretty frequently acting voice actor in L.A.
Weird. I did not expect like that would be the way he would come back to the series.
Yeah, I honestly kind of... Well, I think he's been doing stuff... He was Shockwave in Prime.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, which yeah. I was kind of hoping that would be Shockwave again, but John Bailey's good, though.
Yeah, if you haven't watched this movie and remember the trailers, you might be saying, like, wait, Blitzwing's this? I thought it was Starscream in, like, the trailer. You're not entirely wrong. In the trailers, he was made to look more like Starscream, but in this one, he is specifically a different character. I remember being confused with that watching that, and just like, huh, Starscream seems different, he sounds different, and then, there's an exact moment where I realize it probably wasn't Starscream, which we'll get to in just a second.
Yeah. Something you, I think you mentioned this off mic, but Blitzwing was supposed to be a triple changer in the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And we only see him turning into two things. I will posit this though. He's, what's his third form?
A tank.
Okay. He's not really in any terrain where that would actually be helpful.
Uh-huh.
So that's my headcanon.
Well, it's just a little weird for me. Like they have like a canon for something that like is very genuine, so they take a canon triple changer and have them use them like this, and then introduce two new characters to the franchise who are in fact triple changers.
Yeah, one of them's got a really cool way to kill humans, actually.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah. So when B-127 refuses to reveal Optimus's whereabouts to Blitzwing, Blitzwing tears out his voice box and damages his memory core.
Yeah. It's actually kind of funny because, like, he has a line. I noted this because, like, yeah, he says, Bumblebee says, "I'll never talk," and he says, "Like, is that right? Well, then let's make it official." And just like takes a spike out and like rips that out, which is kind of nasty.
It also makes no sense when you're trying to interrogate the guy.
Yeah, he does. They also fit in affirmatism, which made me happy, where he said that he'll die screaming. He actually does say that. I think he does say that before he rips out the voice.
Hmm.
Although that seems weird, just like, you'll die, scream. Okay, now I'm also gonna make sure that you can't scream. Maybe he just likes irony? I don't know. Blitzwing seems like a complex fellow.
What the hell is Blitzwing's plan here?
Mm-hmm.
This makes zero... Okay, I mean, okay, it... I know you need to set up him being mute. But okay, you know what? Blitzwing's just an idiot. That's the only explanation.
Yeah.
Okay, so despite getting his memory core and voice box destroyed, B-127 stabs and kills Blitzwing with one of his own missiles. Like he's choking him. He's like got him hanging in the air and choking him. Bumblebee just like opens up his arm, grabs one of his missiles, and just like sticks it into his own chest. And once he's far enough away, he shoots it from a distance and explodes it. Uh-huh. It was really cool.
Yeah. That was the exact point watching this movie. Like, okay, that probably wasn't Starscream.
Yeah. didn't they say it was Blitzwing? Like, because at this point he can still talk. I thought he said, I thought Bumblebee called him Blitzwing.
Maybe? I know there's a line when he's flying up and John Cena's just like, who called in the Air Force? He's like, that's not the Air Force. But I don't remember him using Blitzwing's name.
Okay.
I'm not saying it didn't happen, I just don't remember it and it's not in my notes.
Okay, I thought he did. Yeah, so before, he kills him with his own missile, then he kind of just wanders off. Before collapsing from his injuries, he scans a nearby Volkswagen Beetle and transforms into a yellow one.
Yeah, I will say this is a very cool kind of, like, visual effect of how they do it, where his, like, it's from a first-person perspective, and those displays are represented by hexes, and he's going, like, more of the hexes start fading out until just, like, there's no picture left. And I think that's a very cool visual for what's representation of what's happening to him.
Yeah. So in 1987, teenager Charlie Watson, played by Haley Steinfeld, remains traumatized by the death of her father and resentful of her mother Sally, played by veteran voice actor and less known on-screen actor Pamela Adlon.
Mm-hmm.
I guess she'd be best known as Bobby from King of the Hill.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
She's also got that show on FX. I don't know if it's still going on because it was co-created by Louis C.K.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that show's still going on or not, but I saw an episode. It was okay.
Yeah. I will admit, the setup introduces perhaps my big low point of the movie. We're just like, how would we know that we're in the 80s in this movie? It's like constant like pop culture references.
Yeah. I think Mimo kind of just takes care of that for the most part.
Well, it's like a lot of background stuff. Like, they go, like, she's gonna go out and, like, she'll go out and, like, eat Mr. T cereal, which is like, was that a thing that even existed?
Oh, I guarantee you. It was the 80s. Every show was marketing.
Like, there's a ton of 80s songs in the soundtrack, which admittedly they kind of justify by, like, her being super into music. In particular, into the... Fudge, I'm gonna say the name wrong. The Smiths.
Yeah.
That's right. I would feel bad, like, which is a critical point, even though it's like it's a band I'm not as familiar with. Like, I grew up in the 80s, but like a lot of this music is not like was old, like, I wasn't old enough to appreciate a lot of this music at the time.
Mm.
So some of the musical reference, like, I don't know, I guess it's not quite as, like, obvious, like, excessive as, like, I feel sometimes Guardians of the Galaxy, just like, yeah, like, we're gonna use, like, all the hits from the 80s in this movie. And I feel like maybe this one went for a bit deeper cuts. I don't know, like,
wasn't
I'm probably getting a bit pedantic about, like, just, like, I feel like if you do your period piece, like, you don't have to, like, throw in everything from that period.
Didn't Star-Lord leave Earth in, like, the 90s? Like, 95?
Maybe? I think so.
I thought he did. It doesn't really matter, though.
Yeah. Sorry for the tangent.
Yeah, no. Hey, yeah. I turned a half hour, or covering a half hour cartoon into an hour long podcast when I'm guesting over there. Like, I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Actually, I do have one more note. As we're going across our belongings to see a picture of family, you also see a picture as a diver. Keep that in mind for later.
Yeah, because it's integral to her story arc.
It is. Kind of is.
It's almost as if she blames diving for her losing her dad or something. Like,
kind of, even though it explicitly does not.
Yeah, this isn't really spoilers, but her dad died of a heart attack. Was she at a meet or something?
I don't know. Well, she'll say later that the one video that I don't know if it's a meet or a practice, Bumblebee watches, was the last time her father was there.
Hmm.
And, like, it's the last, you know, the last thing she has of being with him.
Maybe that's why she stopped diving, actually. Just, he was at all of her meets and stuff, so it reminds her of him.
Yeah, well, I gotta admit, now that you bring it up, like, heart attack is a weird way for, like, the sudden father death to die in a movie.
Yeah.
usually be like, oh no, there was an accident at the factory, or...
Well, I...
Or something...
I will, I got a point about that later, because there's a point in this movie where Bumblebee's in trouble and she responds as if he's having a heart attack.
Uh-huh.
So I posit that that's why he died of a heart attack. It actually does uh-huh. play into the story.
Okay.
Okay, we'll get to that, but...
Yeah.
Alright, so, she's traumatized by the death of her father and resentful of her mother for moving on too quickly with a new boyfriend named Ron. Mm-hmm. She's got a little brother, Otis. Ron's not Otis's dad, right?
I actually wasn't sure. Like, my assumption, like, oh, she doesn't get along with the because she's a step kid. But like, no, wait, he's kind of old, so that means they've been together for a while, which I guess doesn't exclude it. But it seems like he's a recent addition to the family.
Yeah, I was just well. The real question is Otis Ron's kid, or is he? Is Ron his stepdad also?
Okay, no, okay. At least according to the wiki, it's saying that he got over the death of their father and accepted their mother's new boyfriend, Ron. So no, he is not her stepbrother.
Okay. Well, I was thinking either step or half, but he's younger. He'd be able to take it, like, get over it a little bit easier.
No, I get it, because it's kind of like the trope, just like, oh, you have the stepfather, and then you have the stepbrother, just like, oh, they're related to me, but they're also different for angst.
Mm.
But no, like, he actually is her full brother.
Mm. I'm going to be skipping a lot of, like, just character stuff. Charlie finds a yellow Volkswagen Beetle, which is actually B-127. Was there any significance to that, by the way?
Huh?
B-127, is there any significance to that?
I actually don't know if that's a reference.
It's not anything in Leet speak.
All right, I don't think it's like a number to like refer to, like, I don't know, his original release. And
it could be. Yeah, they did, because most of the toys have like model numbers, don't they? That could be it. She finds the Beetle in a scrapyard belonging to Hank. I couldn't find his actor, but I felt like he was supposed to be someone.
Uncle Hank?
Yeah.
Len Carew. I don't know who he is.
Me either.
He seems like he's probably like a that guy character actor, though.
Oh, yeah, but I felt like maybe he was someone who was part of the, like, involved with the franchise back in the 80s. But maybe not. He could just be a personable old guy that they put in.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, Uncle Hank gives her the Beetle as an 18th birthday present.
Yeah, I put in my notes like, oh, isn't that sweet? Her uncle gave her a Transformer for her birthday.
he admits out loud, that thing's a death trap. It's not even fit to drive. But she's happy. Which I'm like, yeah, I bet a lot of uncles have that feeling when they give their niece's presents.
Yeah, maybe wonder, like, did Volkswagen Beetles actually have a poor safety record? I don't remember that.
I was looking at the Wikipedia article. It's a 1967 Beetle, so it's like 20 years old at this point. Mm-hmm. That might be what they're talking about. It's just maybe. It's an old car.
They also make a comment about, like, the parents make a comment in their station where, like, oh, we should have gotten seatbelts installed, which is a wild concept to me that, like, oh, there was a point where, like, seatbelts just didn't come in cars all the time.
Yeah, I thought that was in the 70s, though.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph Nader, get back to us. You were part of this. Those who didn't know, Ralph Nader, the presidential candidate in 2000, actually was integral to getting seatbelts being a mandated safety safety equipment in cars.
Mm-hmm.
When trying to start it, Charlie unknowingly activates a homing beacon that's detected by two Decepticons, Shatter, played by Angela Bassett, and Dropkick, played by Justin Theroux.
Yeah. Both of these characters are original for the movie with a slight asterisk on Dropkick.
So Dropkick's kind of just a bruiser, so I feel like his name really fits him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, his weapon I feel like should go more to a Transformer named Shatter.
Uh-huh. yeah, it's so, more like a splatter.
True. So they're interrogating and they interrogate and execute the Autobot equivalent of John Bean, Cliff Jumper, because this is like a third series where I've seen him die like early on.
Yeah, weirdly similar to, like, it really reminds me of how he dies in Prime, though I will say it didn't bother me as much as his death does in Prime, probably because it wasn't, like, a big tease that he was going to be a main character and then gets off, and it was like, oh, hey, there's Cliff Jumper, like, oops, he gets sliced in half.
Yeah, oh, he also, like, as they're interrogating him, he kind of just repeats his name, rank, and serial number, basically.
Yeah.
He never gets to finish his speech, though. I think he says, my safe return will ensure something, that they keep cutting him off every time he tries to say it.
Uh-huh.
Cliff Jumper, you're dealing with Decepticons. They're not going to care about safe return.
Mm-hmm.
The only time they're going to... I think the only time any of them would care is if one of the higher-ups is planning a scheme to lure Optimus into a prisoner exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so they kill him on one of Saturn's moons and then head towards Earth, where they adapt Earth vehicle forms and pretend to be peacekeepers. Actually, right before they meet up with Sector 7, who set up a roadblock, they've got a plane and a helicopter, which they both scan. And did you notice the agent who runs to John Cena? It's Seymour Simmons, John Turturro's character from the first few movies.
Though not played by John Turturro, because it's supposed to be the younger one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although that's a blink and you miss reference, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, there
is one, like, I do want to say, like, a couple of things I want to add to this.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the gag when the Decepticons come, and, like, they come and, like, there's, like, a redneck couple fighting, and they see this comet, and one of them freaks out that, like, one was headed towards his car. And then, like, it completely misses and go and, like, takes out a shark. It's like, woo. But then the second Decepticon comes down and totally smashes his car.
Yeah. And then, like, drives out of the fire in the car's form. Which I think he thought that the car came alive.
Yeah. I will say a nice detail is if you pay attention to the Decepticons' robot modes, they do change as they get extra modes. Like, it's not just... Which I think is a nice touch detail that, like, reflecting, like, oh, they added an extra vehicle mode. It changes the robot mode. It's not just, like, they get, like, the back kibble, so they can tell, like, oh, that they can change into a jet now.
I think there was some reference in a sign or something in this scene. I think it was the name of the restaurant they owned. Because the redneck couple, like, is living in a trailer, but I think they own a restaurant or something, like, right next to it.
I did not catch it.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but it was I remember there being something there. Anyways,
which is funny because like I caught the GoBots reference and my brother didn't.
So they persuade Dr. Powell and the rest of Sector 7, despite Burns' disagreement, to help them find and capture B-127, whom they claim is a fugitive and traitor.
Mm-hmm.
Which I will admit, since they're the Autobot Resistance, is technically true. If the Decepticons are the legitimate government of Cybertron.
Oh yeah, no, it's the best kind of truth. Like, yep, we're technically telling you the truth about him.
Yeah.
Never mind that we are in fact the evil ones.
Yeah. Honestly, the only part that isn't even technically true is the fact that they're peacekeepers.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, actually, they call themselves bounty hunters. That probably went a little closer to the truth.
It's true, but that probably would have given it a bit way more.
Yeah. So, while Charlie attempts to fix the Beetle, it transforms into B-127, whom she befriends, and starts calling Bumblebee. Because she said, you sound like a Bumblebee. I guess that's him trying to talk.
Yeah.
She unknowingly unlocks a message from Optimus, urging Bumblebee to defend Earth in their absence, which restores some of his memories. Bumblebee begins speaking using songs. He's discovered by Charlie's neighbor Mimo, who agrees to protect their secret due to his, I'm gonna say, crush for Charlie.
Oh yeah, he definitely is crushing on her.
Yeah, no, just that the way I had it written down made it sound more serious.
Mm-hmm.
So left alone. So Charlie actually leave him alone at home.
Yeah. Side note, Mimo, or I forget if it says Mimo or Memo. Not really a great name. My roommate dropped in. I was watching this at my apartment, and my roommate dropped in towards the end. And, like, she hears when he said his name, it's like, wait, his name is Mimo? It's like, yeah, it's supposed to be short for Guillermo. It's just like, that seems weird. And, like, well, I guess it's the 80s. You're not a... I don't know. It does seem... It is kind of a weird name. That's not the weirdest name in Transformers. I mean, we were talking about a franchise, but, like, one of, like, the core characters is named Spike, and his father's Sparkplug.
Yeah. I still maintain those have to be nicknames.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least Sparkplug. I actually know someone named Spike.
Yeah.
So they leave Bumblebee alone for a while, and he accidentally destroys Charlie's home and causes an energy spike that attracts Sector 7's attention.
Mm-hmm.
Something cool is, so they took him back to Sector 7 headquarters. They adapt technology and like let them know they're searching for an energon signature. The general, like, it sort of gave them access as, like, yeah, here's the thing. They also gave us a way to hunt them down if they betray us.
Yeah. Or are you talking about the scene in which the Decepticons invent the internet?
Oh, yeah.
That's definitely something that happens in this movie.
That was canon. That was canon before this movie.
It certainly explains a lot about our society, that the internet was made by a couple of evil robots.
If they were smart, they would have put up a back, or if servers were a thing at that point, they would have uploaded a backup themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But that actually was canon. Like the Sector 7 used the energy from the cube to basically advance their own technology, didn't they?
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That is established.
Yeah. So they call it Sector an energy spot, an energon spike, as they were calling it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably a good time to talk about the deleted scene. There's an extended scene where after he accidentally plugged into the outlet, some of the appliances start coming to life.
Mm-hmm.
Which I mentioned kind of is you can see why they took it out, because it would diminish the specialness of the AllSpark if you just need to share some energon with an electronic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, though it is weird, though it did make it into some of the adaptations of it. Like, much like other, as like, historically, how, since movie adaptations tend to be based on earlier drafts of the script, they'll tend to include stuff that gets cut.
Yeah. Probably because, like, they takes longer for them to go to print.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when Sally blames Charlie for the destruction, she finally expresses her pain over her father's death and angrily leaves Bumblebee and Mimo, only to be intercepted by Sector 7 and the Decepticons.
Mm-hmm.
Bumblebee is captured while Charlie and Mimo returned home. Wait, did she leave them behind? Oh, she left with Bumblebee and Mimo, my bad. Bumblebee is captured. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Yeah, so Bumblebee gets captured. I think, like, Mimo and, Charlie black out, and she wakes up in parents, so presumably Sector 7 took her home afterwards.
Mm-hmm. I love the second when, Ron talks about, what did he do? He stole something. He's talking about when he stole something as a kid, and John Cena just, like, without missing a beat, says, like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, Ron is, like, kind of gets a bunch of, like, good lines. It's also somehow weirdly comparable to, like, a better version of Jerry from Rick and Morty, since there's also a learning club up where that he's going to job interviews, so, like, wait, is he unemployed all this time? And just living in?
I guess so, although I'm gonna be honest with you, it's kind of surprising that they can afford that house on a nurse's income.
Look, it was the 80s. The middle class had not been eroded yet.
Yeah.
Reagan was only just coming to power. Though, speaking of Reagan, there's a weirdly poetic scene where, like, when Burns first finds out the Decepticons are going, or the NBEs have showed up, he's, like, sitting in his office, like, pulls out a gun and, like, loads it up as, like, there's a picture of Reagan behind him.
I noticed that, too, yeah.
Mm.
Although knowing Regan, he like it's kind of a toss up how he would react. Like he was very much for the vision of the Golden City on the hill. So in the fact that like, okay, alien visitors, awesome, like welcome them. But at the same time, he also is the man who tried to create the Star Wars program. So Bumblebee's captured while they're returned home. Charlie convinces her brother Otis to cover for her and Mimo as they follow Burns to Sector 7 outpost where Bumblebee is being held. Shatter and Dropkick torture Bumblebee into revealing the Autobots' whereabouts, discovering that the Autobots are coming to Earth. They leave him for dead after revealing their plan to bring the Decepticons to Earth, which Dr. Powell is sitting right there, so he alerts Burns to the truth about the Decepticons, and he gets killed with a disintegrator?
No, with, like, the splatter gun.
Yeah, remember? No, but, like, how would you describe that, though? Disintegrator?
I mean, it's not powder, it's just, like, it makes him, it's more, like, kind of burst. Like, I assume it's supposed to be some, the closest thing is, like, maybe it's some kind of, like, microwave gun that it's so, like, and that's why you just, like, pop when he shoots you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you're kind of just clear goo afterwards.
Yeah.
The first time Dropkick used it, he's like, I like the way they break, or like the way they pop.
Yeah, it's like, it definitely feels like it's very much like it, like, it seems like he's on with a gun like that wouldn't be like too implausible to show up in like an MIB movie.
Oh, like that effect is straight out of an MIB movie, actually, the thing that happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, that is just horrifying. The fact that he's just like, I like the way they pop.
Yeah.
Charlie electroshocks Bumblebee back to life, restoring his memories. This is what I was talking about. She basically defibrillates him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Using a bunch of those, they use it in an earlier scene, but basically, like, they're kind of stun gun, like, basically, like, you know, stun guns, they shoot a pod and electrocute things.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm... They're you like probably know what to talk about the instant I say it.
Yeah, no, but like we should mention that the guns are like, what's it called? They're shotgun size. Those things that shoot like smoke grenades, it's like a grenade launcher that's a stun gun. That's what it is.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So she basically like defibrillates him back to life, which is how I say her dad having a heart attack is integral to the story because she for sure would have learned how to deal with a heart attack and the fact that her mom's a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I skipped a couple lines here by accident.
Mm-hmm.
So after fighting past Burns' obstruction and attempt to resecure Bumblebee with the help of Mimo, Sally, Ron and Otis, Charlie and Bumblebee set out to prevent Shatter from and Dropkick from contacting the Decepticons using a radio tower at a nearby harbor. Burns also intervenes and defends Charlie from Shatter. His helicopter is shot down by Shatter, but Burns is saved by Bumblebee, which I thought kind of reminded me of Agent Fowler from Prime, because a bunch of times, like, whatever vehicle he's in got scanned by a transformer, and it just goes down. While Bumblebee fights Dropkick, he binds him with a chain, which entangles his system when he transforms, and Bumblebee just rips him apart.
Yeah.
He just, like, tugs on the chain, and he just pulls him into pieces.
Yeah.
And my reaction...
His last line is like, you think this chain's gonna hold me?
It's like, no. I think it's gonna pull you apart. My reaction to this was, I think Bumblebee just killed a guy.
Yeah. Well, it is the live-action universe. There's still, like, even if Bay's not there, I guess, like, the killing is pretty what happens. Although, at least I feel like there's more impact than, like, some of the various like Autobots killing Decepticons in the previous movies.
Oh, he decapitated a guy in the opening scene. I don't know if you noticed. He decapitated a guy, then kicked his head down into another Decepticon charging at Optimus. Like that first scene of him showing up is basically like, this guy's a badass. Here you go.
Yeah.
Charlie deactivates the Decepticon beacon, which causes an enraged Shatter to pursue her. Bumblebee ends up destroying a wet dock wall. Like, think like he just opened up a dam, which makes a flood, causing a cargo ship to crush shatter into the docks, killing her. Charlie, like, dives into the flooded area, I guess.
Yeah, thinking... we get the diving ex machina.
Yeah.
As I put in my notes, since, or Chekhov's dive, if you prefer.
Chekhov's dive, probably, yeah.
If you tell a character won a diving contest in the first act, she must save a transformer by performing a high dive in the third act.
Well, she doesn't even save him, because, like, when she gets under the water, she sees, like, oh, you're fine. Yeah, so Bumblebee just, like, takes it in his hand and gets and stands back up and pulls himself out of the water. So Burns, having a change of heart and grateful towards Bumblebee, gives him and Charlie time to escape before the army arrives. He had yet to convince them that Bumblebee was not the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, couldn't you convince them if they came?
Wait, which part?
So, you know, John Cena lets them go. But did he really need to? Like, he could have just explained, like, yeah, this guy's okay.
I mean, I guess? I mean, it does seem strange. We're just like, oh, maybe we should create we know there are evil alien robots and here's a good one. Maybe we should create an alliance?
Yeah. It explains why he was so jumpy in the first movie when, like, they captured him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they drive... Charlie and Bumblebee arrive on a cliff overlooking the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm pretty sure I've been there, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Where Charlie, realizing that Bumblebee has a greater purpose on Earth, says goodbye. Bumblebee scans a Camaro and transforms into a yellow version of it. Charlie's reaction is, you're telling me this whole time you could have been a Camaro?
Mm-hmm.
He drives away. Charlie reunites with her family and Mimo. Which we get a fun little quick scene. Mimo tries to, like, hold her hand. He's like, oh, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, that was kind of nice. So now using his new name, Bumblebee reunites with Optimus Prime. Oh, we should mention the truck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He drives down Golden Gate Bridge, what clearly looks like Optimus Prime, where it's a red fender belt truck. Or a Freightliner truck. And it has a trailer with, like, the blue stripe that's on the original toy trailer.
Yeah. And the scene we're about to talk about wasn't originally in the movie. It was supposed to be a little more ambiguous whether Optimus is here or not. Which it still is. Like, that truck that he's driving next to is not supposed to be Optimus.
Yeah.
But using his new name now, Bumblebee reunites with Optimus Prime. Prime praises Bumblebee for keeping Earth safe as they watch more Autobots arrive through Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah. I have my notice, like, this is where we officially break with continuity.
Yeah. I counted them. There's about 7 Autobots on their way. So I'm wondering who's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Charlie finally finishes repairing the Corvette she and her dad were working on and drives off into sunset.
Yeah, I think we kind of blew past that where she's working on this car. It's like it's our one link between her dad and her, and which is also I think it's kind of almost to kind of be symbolic when she, in order to like give Bumblebee a voice, she takes the radio out of that car and puts it into him.
Yeah. And that was pretty much the end of the movie. I did sit through the credits checking to see if there was a post credits scene. There was not.
Well, there originally was, but. We'll get to that.
Yeah. Okay, so...
I will also, like, my roommate also commented where it's like, these are the most Marvel movie credits going on.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It did very much remind me of the first Iron Man credits.
Uh-huh.
So, a couple things of... sorry, the... One sec. Sorry, the closing music just started. We've hit an hour.
Oops.
I wasn't expecting it. A couple bits of trivia. Bumblebee was released in a limited edition VHS on April 1st.
God.
It came out. I mean, I'm sure having that is just for the nostalgia factor.
Yeah. I have not owned a VHS player in most, in like all of my adult life.
There's one in the living room.
I mean, there's one in my parents' house. I mean, that's where they live.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, like you can't get any new ones nowadays, but you can still find plenty on eBay.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing is, so in March 2019, producer Lorenzo de Bonaventura said they were developing scripts for sequels for both Bumblebee and Transformers Last Night. So I guess they're going to have two separate continuities. However, in April, De Bonaventura backtracked on his comments and confirmed there is no sequel in development for The Last Night. We can all breathe easy.
Yes. Well, I think the sequel for The Last Night was when this was only supposed to be a prequel, which, as I get, I think this is a good transition. So, originally, when this movie was in development, it was going to be a prequel. It was going to have much tighter ties to the original movie. The reason why Bumblebee, gets a Jeep as his first form of the beginning movie is because because in The Last Night, during like the World War II stuff, he had a Jeep mode. So this would be why he is it. Whereas in this movie, they had to be like, they had to just like, oh yeah, we have a yellow Jeep in the woods, right, for our training exercise, I guess. And he's going to acquire that instead of, you know, one of the many, many Hummers that are there.
No, well, I'm not sure if the one he scanned was yellow or not.
True.
Yeah.
You see. The other changes. So, we mentioned that Megatron does not show up in the scenes on Cybertron. There actually was going to be a post-credit scene where they'd go in, where you'd fall back Burns and, like, Simmons and the General, and they'd be like, Congress is like, they must never know the truth. As it zooms out and they see you have, like, NBB1, like, under their Hoover Dam. And I guess probably also the Allspark, but, like, that got completely cut.
Hmm.
See,
which were... Wait, so they moved NBE1 from the Arctic to the Hoover Dam, but the cube was there the entire time, right?
Right, the cube was there the entire time, and that's when they built the Hoover Dam. It was a, when the story of the movie was like a way to cover it,
which makes zero sense because like that area was there for, you know, millions of years, so someone would have seen it, unless it was underground somehow.
Uh-huh.
Actually, that would make sense. I think
it was always supposed to be underground, and like they didn't, and no one found it, and finding Megatron helped find it, if memory serves me correct.
Okay, that would make sense.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I withdraw my Elma actually then.
Mm-hmm.
It being underground would make more sense that people wouldn't have seen it there.
Yeah, the changes came so late in production. This actually renders a lot of the time material non-continuity. For example, the IDW like prequel comic takes place in the interim period and features Bumblebee still in his Jeep mode in the 60s working with British intelligence to foil the plans of Decepticons, including Blitzwing. So yeah, obviously that didn't happen in this movie.
That would have been cool though.
Uh-huh.
So as of last night, when did Bumblebee get to Earth? Pre-World War II, basically?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you haven't seen it either.
I have not seen it, but Last Night reveals that, oh, Transformers were around and fighting in World War II.
And they were around in the time of King Arthur.
Right. That too.
Yeah. Oy. Anyways. Is there anything else?
Trying to remember if there's any other continuity things. I don't think so. Oh, there are also, we kind of went through it, but there was also a lot of other good, like, small references. Shatter, in addition to being a rare, like, evil female Transformer, and not also, like, have to be, like, extra sexy one, is based on Nightbird from Gen 1 cartoon, who is a giant female robot ninja. That's really the only way to describe it.
Hmm.
When Memo, one of Memo's early scenes, he's seen reading GoBots magazine number one, which was a real thing, and then tosses it aside when he sees Charlie, which I had in my notes, like, still more respectful than IDW was to GoBots in its original run.
I went back and tried to pause on the cover of that magazine, because I'm like, oh, he's embarrassed by it, he doesn't want to be seen. Yeah. And he says, I think later on, don't reveal you're a nerd to himself. Uh-huh. And I'm just like, yeah. What was he reading?
Yeah.
I actually thought maybe he was reading a different kind of magazine.
Which actually raises a question, like, so in the universe, like, Transformers exist in reels, but, like, GoBots was a toy that completely unrelated to it? Like, it was just made? Oh. Does that mean...
Did you notice this is in 1987, 1 year after the franchise would have ended?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did not realize that. Does this mean, does Hasbro not exist in this universe? Does Tonka go out like Kenner in, like, the 90s and achieve, become, like, the second biggest toy thing in the world?
We,
company in the world?
We, so what was I gonna say? They still got My Little Pony.
Mm-hmm.
I think they owned him back then.
Well, no, like, well, I'm just like, does Hasbro not exist, and that's why Transformers as a toy line does not exist, but GoBots does? Is there, like, intense, like, GoBots nostalgia in it? Has, like, will alternate universe Michael Bay get attached to do a live-action remake of GoBots?
We need something a little more dark and gritty to do that remake.
I mean, the GoBots are kind of dark and gritty. They're all, like, technically human cyborgs. There's a lot of stuff you could do with there.
Oh, God, I did not know that.
Yeah, no, like, I think it was a brief plot point in Beast Wars Uprising, but, yeah, they're technically cyborgs, not pure robots.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, we had the monster GoBot, so I thought that was just them, though.
Yeah. Of course, there's a scene where the touch plays, because how could it not?
Oh yeah, when they're up on the cliff, and he uses Bumblebee uses it as a way to encourage her to do a dive. I'm just like, yeah, that song. I was wondering when that song was gonna show up.
And perhaps the most nerdy deep cut reference is during Bumblebee's fight with Dropkick, where at one point Bumblebee throws Bumblebee and he transforms, lands into car mode, veers around back to him, and jumps him with a punch. Which is a actual part replicated from the original Gen 1 Season 1 opening credits. Like, I remember watching this, like, wait, did they just do that thing? And, like, yeah, they did.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is actually my second time watching it. As I said, I worked in theaters, this is your first. So, how did you enjoy the movie? Because, I'm wondering, like, did you like this? Because, like, I noticed you rushed through this quite a bit.
Well, that was more of a time constraint thing, so I had to watch the movie last night, and then I had to, like, write down the parts that I felt were important, because I wasn't watching it as I was writing my notes this time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, which does kind of play into my opinion of this movie, there was too, all character, no story. There wasn't really much substance to this. Like, I can summarize what happened in this movie in about 5 seconds. The Autobots are losing. They evacuate the planet. Bumblebee comes to Earth to secure it for them to regroup at. A couple of Decepticons show up and try to kill him / get a signal off to them to summon the Decepticon army. Bumblebee, with the help of humans, beats them. There you go.
I see. I will add a slight counterpoint, where I will say it was actually nice to get some character beats, because, like, the original movies are, like, kind of infamously devoid of any and all characteristics.
I realize that, but here's the thing. I think one of the producers or someone in Paramount, like, I think I mentioned this last week, said that the next one's going to have more base explosions, and that's because the domestic gross of this movie wasn't as big as they wanted it to be. It did, like, awesome internationally, which is why we're going to be keep along with this this continuity. But it almost was the only thing we would have gotten character wise, because it was too much character and not enough story.
Yeah, yeah. I will admit, like, watching it the second time, there were a couple parts where I was, like, checking my watch and, like, when does this stuff happen again?
Yeah.
But there is some good stuff. Like, Bumblebee is animated very wonderfully, and they go really... And they give him a whole sorts of animations to kind of, like, convey the emotion, since for the most of it, he can't talk. I will say, for all, like, the Gen 1 heavy references, it is weird that they kind of have to stick to, like, pretty close to his original, like, Transformers design, because that's what people recognize.
Oh, that reminds me, actually. So, when they're in that tunnel and getting chased by the cops, Bumblebee does that, like, half transformation, where he actually looks a lot like his G1 counterpart.
Mm-hmm.
Like the front hood of his beetle mode is just his torso.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that?
Oh, I did not notice that. That is kind of clever.
Yeah,
and I will say there are some like it's like he how he is. There's a good running gag where Bumblebee is very bad at hiding. There's a couple times where he has to hide, and he'll just like one he literally sticks his head in the sand. Another he like upturns a car that he just wrecked to hide behind.
Oh, one complaint I heard about this movie that, his memories are gone, but he's still an adult, right? So I counter, no, he's not. His memories are gone, which include, like, he kind of reverted back into a child, in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of people were, like, mad about the scene where he's at the house alone. Because he's basically acting like a child. I'm like, yes, he is a child. He did revert into it. He's lost everything. So he basically, for all intents and purposes, is a child. Do you not... Like, adult people, when they're scared, don't hunch up with their legs to their chest. He is a child.
Like, you can make an argument that he's, like not, like, kind of suffering, partially suffering some like from, like, some PTSD, too.
Oh, yeah. Like, that dude just got his voice box ripped out.
Uh-huh.
Which
that said, like, you probably could also make an argument that the home wrecking scene could have been dropped to, like, cut things down a bit more.
Yeah. I mean, okay, overall, it's a good movie. I'm glad we actually got some character moments, a lot of character moments. The only... There aren't really many downsides to this movie, honestly.
Yeah.
I would like to rewatch it just to get a lot of those little bits in there, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, did you notice that was the Zemeckis tunnel, right?
Yeah, I am pretty certain it was. I think in my notes, like, wait, is that the tunnel from Back to the Future 3?
And,
or 2, I guess.
It was 2, but, and, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Uh-huh.
Which, I realized that was the Zemeckis tunnel, and I, after they left, I just yelled at the TV, I'm like, get a new tunnel, Zemeckis! Uh-huh. I know he has nothing to do with this, but...
Right.
Yeah. Anything else before we move on to the Golden Disc?
No, I think that is all.
Okay. So I just checked. We haven't had any interactions and no new reviews on Apple Podcasts or Podknife.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you make your MVP for this one?
Well, you kind of have to go with Bumblebee. I could be contrarian and like say like Shatter or something.
Or you could be really contrarian and make it not a bot at all.
Yeah.
Make it Charlie.
I could say John Cena, since one of his original wrestling characters is he wanted to be, like, the Terminator.
Oh, yeah. I will give an honorable mention to both Mimo and Ron.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I do think, like, John Cena does a pretty good performance. Initially, it was going to be, his role was going to be a lot darker. Like, we mentioned that the friend at the beginning, like, you can clearly see how at a point in the script, that friend was going to die, and he was going to be just, like, that darkness was going to drive him the entire movie.
Yeah.
But it kind of doesn't, like, his friend seems injured, but, like, it never really establishes if he, like, is, but he seems to be also be okay, and he never brings it up again.
Well, one thing I will point out that his friend was at the original training site, and right. He did not get moved to the mine. Where Bumblebee kind of exploded everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
he's well, Blitzwing also shot a lot of things, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Bumblebee's fault.
Well, no, I realize that, but however, Bumblebee did explode a missile right in everybody's face.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I realize, you know, collateral damage, like, but, it wasn't, it was still not cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, you kind of just have, like, in terms of actual bots, it's just Bumblebee. Like you got three options. By the way, do you notice that this thing had kind of a minuscule budget? I don't know if you saw.
I do recall reading about that.
Yeah, which I guess is why there was only like three actual Transformers in most of the movie. There is so I guess we're going on to next episode preview. The next episode, after releasing a Doomsday weapon, Optimus Primal must face the consequences of his actions. One might say the fallout from his actions in Fallout.
Yep, we're going back. We're going back to Beast Machines as we to start the second season.
We're going from 1987 back to 300 years in the future.
Yep.
Anything else to say before we get to the closing?
No, that's it. This is actually there is one more thing. I was reading off the reception to this movie. There is a quote from an NPR reviewer. Mankind has split the atom, sent a man to the moon, and now, in arguably its most unlikely achievement, has produced a watchable Transformers movie.
Nice.
All right. I think that is all.
Okay. All right. So here comes the closing, guys. Thank you for listening to Axon Archives. If you have any questions, want to guest on the show, or just want to talk about Beast Wars, you can reach us on Twitter at Axon Archives or by email at axonarchives@gmail.com. Part of the music used in this episode is Fat Planet by Left Field, and is copyright Left Field. Fat Planet is used only for the purposes of discussion, and no violation of international copyright law is intended. You can find the band on the web at leftfieldmusic.com, and on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes by searching Left Field, all one word. You can find our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Podcasts, Podknife, Podbean, and a whole other bunch of places, including Stitcher and Spotify. We have closed the box on Pandora, as James would say. Please leave a rating and a review, preferably on Apple Podcasts or Podknife. Those are the two places I'm able to check most easily. It helps people find the show and helps us grow an audience. Check out our website at axon.buzzsprout.com. If you want to follow either of us individually on Twitter, I'm at Dowfac.
I'm at Discord_Inc.
Until next time, remember to transform and transcend your destiny.
Let's get ready to make some noise.